Hello, my name is Tony Reid. Welcome to GAY, a radio programme for gay people and their friends on Coast Access Radio 104.7 FM. Over the next two programmes over the Christmas period, I have decided to repeat a double programme that I did over 10 years ago, in fact in 2014, to celebrate, or commemorate rather, the anniversary of World War I. So let's listen to it again. It will not have escaped your notice, I am sure, that it's the centenary of the First World War, which started 100 years ago this month. So I have a number of programmes with which I'm going to delight you relating to this topic. And the next two programmes will be about the World War I war poets, the two gay war poets, Siegfried Sassoon and Wilfred Owen. Let's start with Siegfried Sassoon. He was born in 1886. His background was partly Jewish, but not at all German. He was only called Siegfried because his mother was a Wagner fan. But he came from a very wealthy family and actually never needed to work all his life because he had so much money. Isn't that nice? He volunteered for World War I, became a war hero, won the Military Cross in 1916. It's clear from reading about him that certainly for most of his life, he was gay. He had lots of affairs, including Ivor Novello after the war, I think. But in 1933, he suddenly married. This appears to be because he wanted a son, and he duly had a son. And after that, the marriage didn't last very long at all. His son just died a few years ago. He was writing poems in the trenches, and in the earlier months of the war, they were traditional poems. Here's Absolution from 1915. The anguish of the earth absolves our eyes till beauty shines in all that we can see. War is our scourge, yet war has made us wise, and fighting for our freedom, we are free. Horror of wounds and anger at the foe and loss of things desired, all these must pass. We are the happy legion, for we know time's but a golden wind that shakes the grass. There was an hour when we were loath to part from life. We longed to share no less than others. Now, having claimed this heritage of heart, what need we more, my comrades and my brothers? He comments on quite a few of his poems in this book. And he says, people used to feel like this when they joined up in 1914 and 1915. No one feels like it when they go out again. By the next year, 1916, he wrote what he calls the first of his outspoken war poems, called In the Pink. So Davis wrote, this leaves me in the pink, then scrawled his name, your loving sweetheart, Willie, with crosses for a hug. He'd had a drink of rum and tea, and though the barn was chilly, for once his blood ran warm, he had pay to spend. Winter was passing, soon the year would mend. But he couldn't sleep that night. Stiff in the dark, he groaned and thought of Sundays at the farm, and how he'd go as cheerful as a lark in his best suit, to wander arm in arm with brown-eyed Gwen, and whisper in her ear the simple, silly things she liked to hear. And then he thought, tomorrow night we trudge up to the trenches and my boots are rotten, 5 miles of stodgy clay and freezing sludge, and everything but wretchedness forgotten. Tonight he's in the pink, but soon he'll die, and still the war goes on. He don't know why. As you can see from that, his view of the war changes, and in 1917 he did a very dramatic action. He wrote an open letter. Very open. I mean, it was published in the Times and everywhere, and was read to the House of Commons. I am making this statement as an act of willful defiance of military authority, because I believe that the war is being deliberately prolonged by those who have the power to end it. I am a soldier, convinced that I am acting on behalf of soldiers. I believe that the war upon which I entered as a war of defence and liberation has now become a war of aggression and conquest. I believe that the purposes for which I and my fellow soldiers entered upon this war should have been so clearly stated as to have made it impossible to change them, and that had this been done, the objects which actuated us would now be attainable by negotiation. I have seen and endured the sufferings of the troops, and I can no longer be a party to prolong those sufferings for ends which I believe to be evil and unjust. I am not protesting against the conduct of the war, but against the political errors and insincerities for which the fighting men are being sacrificed. On behalf of those who are suffering now, I make this protest against the deception which is being practiced upon them. Also, I believe it may help to destroy the callous complacency with which the majority of those at home regard the continuance of agonies which they do not share and which they have not enough imagination to realise. So that was a fairly strong statement, and of course it got him into a lot of trouble. But the solution was not to court-martial a war hero, which might have been a bit embarrassing, but to decide he was nuts and to send him to an asylum. So he was sent to a hospital in Scotland called Craig Lockhart, and there he met a young officer suffering from shell shock called Wilfred Owen. A very important meeting indeed. Wilfred Owen was born in March 1893, actually about 2 weeks after my grandfather, who fought in the Battle of the Somme, and I think had views similar, if less poetic, to Wilfred Owen about the about World War I. He grew up as an only child, very close to his mother, a very sensitive soul. He went and became a teacher in France, and was actually there for the first year or so of World War I. A snatch of early poem, which is quoted in the war poems edited by John Stallworthy. I don't think this poem was published or even finished, but it goes, "Oh, it is meet and it is sweet to live in peace with others, but sweeter still and far more meet to die in war for brothers." Stallworthy comments, understandably, Owen abandoned this ballad, but it should be remembered that in 1914 his sentiments were similar to those of Rupert Brooke, but less well expressed. His meeting with Sassoon in Craig Lockhart, having experienced the war for about a year, and having had this horrendous experience which led to his shell shock, produced a considerable change and produced the poems that are now famous. There was a recording made about 20 years ago of the poems, and also the letters to his mother, which are very specific about the war, far more detailed than one imagined that soldiers sent home to sweethearts, let alone to mothers, but he did. Anyway, Kenneth Branagh made this recording, so I'm going to start with one of his most famous poems, Dulce et Decorum Est. And I have been told that people don't speak Latin at all anymore, so I have to translate it. It's a famous line from a Latin poet, Horace, called, "It is a sweet and right thing to die for one's country." This is the poem based on that line by Owen, and what he made of that famous quote.
Dulce et decorum est. Bent double, like old beggars under sacks, knock-kneed, coughing like hags, we cursed through sludge, till on the haunting flares we turned our backs, and towards our distant rest began to trudge. Men marched asleep. Many had lost their boots, but limped on, blood-shod. All went lame, all blind, drunk with fatigue, deaf even to the hoots of tired, outstripped 5-9s that dropped behind. Gas. Gas! Quick, boys! An ecstasy of fumbling, fitting the clumsy helmets just in time. But someone still was yelling out and stumbling and floundering like a man in fire or lime. Dim through the misty panes and thick green light, as under a green sea, I saw him drowning. In all my dreams before my helpless sight, he plunges at me, guttering, choking, drowning. If in some smothering dreams you too could pace behind the wagon that we flung him in, and watch the white eyes writhing in his face, his hanging face like a devil sick of sin, if you could hear at every jolt the blood come gargling from the froth-corrupted lungs, obscene as cancer, bitter as the cud of vile, incurable sores on innocent tongues, my friend, you would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory the old lie, dulce et decorum est, pro patria mori.
After their stay in Craig Lockhart, both Sassoon and Owen went back to the front. Sassoon was wounded and retired home and survived the war. Owen stayed in England for quite a while, recuperating after he left Craig Lockhart. He actually wrote some of his most poems in Scarborough, of all unlikely places. But he also went to London with a letter and some money from Sassoon, where he met a number of Sassoon's friends, Osbert Sitwell and Robbie Ross, who was still carrying the flag for Oscar Wilde, with whom he had had a relationship many years ago. So Owen was certainly involved in what is often referred to as the cult of Wilde. He met a number of people, including a rather wonderful character called C.K. Scott Moncrief, who fell in love with him. There's a biography of C.K. Scott Moncrief coming out next month, which I've ordered. He's most famous for translating Proust, but he seemed to know and have relationships with nearly everybody at the time, including Owen. But it's generally felt that that period, whether he actually did anything or not, is very important for him. Stallworthy says that admits that he was very clearly gay, but believes that he didn't do anything partly because he was worried that his mother would be very upset if she found out, because he was very close to her. And interestingly, although his mother kept all his papers after she died, his brother did. So all his letters to his mother and most of the family survive. He did supposedly destroy some documents because he felt they did not reflect on his famous brother very, very well. So we will never quite know what those were, but certainly something went on. But then, despite the attempts of many to stop him doing so, he did go back to the front. Owen did go back to the front and was, in a sense, transformed. He won the Military Cross, but was involved in the thick of the fighting right towards the end of the war. And on November the 4th, 1918, he was killed leading an attempt to cross a canal. Of course, a week later, the war was over and his mother actually received the telegram on Armistice Day. So he wasn't really well known for ages. For example, Vera Brittain, in her famous memoir about her own World War One experiences, Testament of Youth, quotes lots of poetry, but none of Owen, which always surprised me because he would seem to have very similar views to her own. I quote, cheered on by Siegfried Sassoon, Owen's poems were passed around a certain poem of sophisticates in the 1930s, 1940s and 50s. They were published, but it was only in the 1960s, a decade in which authority was pushed against and when anti-war Britons once more had a high-profile conflict on which to peg their protest, that Owen's poetry achieved lasting popularity. It was a particular work from the 1960s that helped to achieve this fame. Benjamin Britten, who we have had a number of programs about, was asked to write a major work for the consecration of Coventry Cathedral. The old Coventry Cathedral had been bombed in the Blitz, and a new cathedral was built and consecrated in 1962. His response to this was one of his most famous works and one of the most popular pieces of contemporary classical music ever composed, called The War Requiem. And he struck on the... He was already knew Owen's poems and already set one, at least one, in a previous work. But he came to the conclusion that it would be a good idea to contrast the traditional words of the Latin Requiem with the poems of Wilfred, some of the poems of Wilfred Owen, so that the poems could form a commentary upon the Requiem, and indeed really contradict it in places. Britten was, of course, a pacifist, as well as being gay, like Owen was. The contrast, the resulting contrast, could be quite shocking, and he said a lot of his right-wing friends hated the book as a result. It was, as I say, a big event. I can remember it quite well. I was 16 at the time. There was a bit of a fuss because one of the ideas he hit on was to have soloists from the main warring countries. So he had Peter Pears as an Englishman, his partner as the tenor, Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau, the German baritone, and Galina Wisniewskaya, the wife of cellist Rostropovich, who was a famous soprano. She couldn't sing in English, so she sang the Latin with the chorus and the main orchestra, and the tenor and baritone sang the Owen poems to a chamber orchestra, and they only actually come together right at the end of the work. There was a fuss because the Soviet authorities refused to let her out because it was outrageous that a Soviet citizen was being asked to sing such a political work beside a German. They rather missed the whole point of the whole thing in many ways. So for the original performance, Heather Harper, the soprano from Northern Ireland, was called in to sing at 10 days' notice, which was a bit hairy. I have heard her sing it in Leeds Town Hall. For the recording, perhaps it was sufficiently well known and understood for the Soviets to relent, so Wisniewskaya was let out. And there's a famous, very famous recording, which is still available. And it sold 300,000 copies in its first year. This is a contemporary classical piece of music. So this puts in very much in the frame. I think another reason why Britten would have been drawn to Wilfred Owen was that the views of both Sassoon and Owen on organised religion during the First World War were not complimentary, to put it mildly. I'll read a couple of short Sassoon poems, which are sort of rather more satirical in nature in many ways. The first one's called They. The bishop tells us when the boys come back, they will not be the same, for they have fought in a just cause. They lead the last attack on Antichrist. Their comrades' blood has bought new right to breed an honourable race. They have challenged death and dared him face to face. We're none of us the same, the boys reply, for George has lost both his legs and Bill's stone blind. Poor Jim's shot through the lungs and like to die, and Bert's gone syphilitic. You'll not find a chap who's served that hasn't found some change. And the bishop said, the ways of God are strange. He comments on that he wrote it rather late at night, and on the way home he actually met the Bishop of London, and he turned a mild shining gaze on me and my MC. He's obviously got it in for bishops, because this second one also features one, Vicarious Christ. The Bishop of Bygum was an old friend of our general. In fact, he knew him out in the Sudan. He preached to our brigade, and the impression that he made was astounding. He was such a Christian man. He compared us to the martyrs who were burnt alive and strangled. Oh, it made us love the war to hear him speak. The Americans, he said, are coming over in large numbers, and the Huns are getting weaker every week. The Bishop of Bygum has preached on victory, I am certain, though I haven't seen it mentioned in the press. But when I was his victim, how I wish I could have kicked him, for he made me love religion less and less. Owen's poem, At a Calvary Near the Ancre, is rather different in nature. I think because although a very short poem, it states both his own views about what Christianity is like and also is obviously very critical of the religious establishment. There were, of course, a number of Calvaries in French churches, and you would have these terrible ruins and everything in ruin, and often this Calvary still standing there, sort of rather symbolically and in the middle of the rubble. One ever hangs where shelled roads part. In this war he too lost a limb, but his disciples hide apart, and now the soldiers bear with him. Near Golgotha strolls many a priest, and in their face there is pride, that they were flesh-marked by the beast by whom the gentle Christ's denied. The scribes on all the people shove and bawl allegiance to the state, but they who love the greater love lay down their life. They do not hate. I think bawl allegiance to the state is one of my favourite lines in Owen. It just so sums up and what Christianity used to be like. And if you think, for example, even contemporarily, it sums up the way the Russian Orthodox Church acts as a wing of the Putin government in Russia. They certainly bawl allegiance to the state. This was one of the poems set by Benjamin Britten in the War Requiem, and I want to end part one with this setting. It's linked to the Agnus Dei, the Lamb of God, and the chorus and orchestra just intone this in the background as the tenor sings this Owen poem. This is the classical recording, and this is Peter Pears singing this, which was obviously written for him. It finishes with probably one of the most difficult scales to sing in tune I have ever heard, and it's obviously just for his voice. Anyway, I'll finish part one with the Agnus Dei and At a Calvary Near Ancre from the War Requiem. Next month I will continue with the poems of Sassoon and Owen, and particularly discuss Owen a little more in view of a BBC documentary I watched recently about him. And we will hear more of Benjamin Britten's War Requiem.
This programme was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and Access Internet Radio. Thanks, New Zealand On Air.